He said, you will want something of a summation then, an annotation. It's not impossible that I misheard him, and what he actually said was exhortation. He looked quickly at his watch, making the same right-angled movement. All right, he said. A small smile played around his mouth as he said, all right, but it was clear that he wasn't joking or trying to trying to slightly undercut what he was about to say, the way so many humanities profs of that era tended to mock themselves or their quotations in order to avoid seeming uncool. It only struck me later, after I'd entered the services TAC, that this substitute was actually the first instructor I'd seen at any of the schools I'd drifted in and out of, who seemed 100% indifferent about being liked or seen as cool or likable by the students. And realized I did, once I'd entered the service, what a powerful quality this sort of indifference could be in an authority figure. Actually, in hindsight, this substitute may have been the first genuine authority figure I ever met, meaning a figure with genuine authority instead of just the power to judge you or squeeze your shoes from their side of the generation gap. And I became aware for the first time that authority was actually something real and authentic, that a real authority was not the same as a friend or someone who cared about you, but nevertheless could be good for you, and that the authority relation was not a democratic or equal one, and yet could have value for both sides, both people in the relation. I don't think I'm explaining this very well, but it's true that I didn't feel singled out, spindled on those eyes in a way I neither liked nor didn't, but was certainly aware of it. It was a certain kind of power that he exerted and that I was granting him voluntarily. That respect was not the same as coercion, although it was a kind of power. It was all very strange. I also noticed that now he had had his hands behind his back in something like the parade rest military position. He said to the accounting students, all right then, before you leave here to resume that crude approximation of a human life you have heretofore called a life, I will undertake to inform you of certain truths. I will then inform an opinion as to how you might most profitably view and respond to those truths. I was immediately aware that he didn't seem to be talking about the advanced tax final exam. He said, you will return to your homes and families for the holiday vacation, and in that festive interval before the last push of CPA examination study, trust me, you will hesitate. You will feel dread and doubt. This will be natural. You will, for what seems the first time, feel dread at your hometown chum Sally's about accountancy as a career before you. You will read the approval in your parents' smiles as an approval of your surrender. Oh, I have been there, gentlemen. I know every cobble in the road you are walking, for the hour approaches. To begin in that literally dreadful interval of looking down before the leap outward, to hear dolorous forecasts as to the sheer drudgery of the profession you are choosing, the lack of excitement or chance to shine on the athletic fields or ballroom floors of life heretofore. True, some of it I didn't quite get. I don't think too many of us in the classroom had spent a lot of time shining on ballroom floors, but that might have been just a generational thing. He obviously meant it as a metaphor. I certainly got what he meant about accounting not seeming like a very exciting profession. The substitute continued. To experience commitment as the loss of options, a type of death, the death of childhood's limitless possibility, of the flattery of choice without duress, this will happen, mark me. Childhood's end, the first of many deaths. Hesitation is natural, doubt is natural. He smiled slightly. You might wish to recall then, in 3 weeks' time, should you be so disposed, this room, this moment, and the information I shall now relay to you. He was obviously not a very modest or diffident person. On the other hand, his form of address didn't sound nearly as formal or fussy at the time in advanced tax as it now sounds when I repeat it. Or rather, his summation was formal and a bit poetic, but not artificially so, like a natural extension of who and what he was. It was not a pose. I remember thinking that maybe the sub had mastered that trick in Uncle Sam posters and certain paintings of seeming to look right at you, no matter what angle you faced him from. that perhaps all the hushed and solemn older other students, you could hear a pin, felt picked out and specifically addressed as well. Though, of course, that would make no difference as to its special effect on me, which was the real issue. Just as a Christian girlfriend story would have already demonstrated if I'd been aware and attentive enough to hear what the actual point she was trying to make was. As mentioned, the version of me that listened to that story in 1973 or 74 was a nihilistic child. After one or two other comments, with his hands still clasped behind his back, the substitute continued. I wish to inform you that the accounting profession to which you aspire is, in fact, heroic. Please note that I have said inform and not opine or allege or posit. The truth is that when you soon go home to your carols and toddies and books and CPA examination preparation guides to stand on the cusp of it, what you stand on the cusp of is heroism. Obviously, this was dramatic and held everyone's attention. I remember thinking again as he said this of the A.V. Screen's quote I thought was biblical, the moral equivalent of war. It seems strange, but not ridiculous. I realized that my thinking about this quote was probably the first time I'd ever considered the word moral in any context other than a term paper. This was part of what I had initially started to become aware of a few days prior, in the experience of while watching As the World Turns. The substitute was only of about average height. His eyes did not cut or wander. Some of the students' glasses reflected light still. One or two were still taking notes, but other than that, nobody except the substitute spoke or moved. Continuing on without pause, he said, exacting, prosaic, banostic, to the point of drudgery, sometimes, often tedious, perhaps, but brave, worthy, fitting, sweet, romantic, chivalric, heroic. When he paused, it wasn't just for effect, at least not totally. Gentlemen, he said, by which I mean, of course, latter adolescents who aspire to manhood. Gentlemen, here is a truth. Enduring tedium over real time in a confined space is what real courage is. Such endurance is, as it happens, the distillate of what is today in this world neither I nor you have made, heroism. Heroism. He made a point of looking around, gauging people's reactions. Nobody laughed. A few looked puzzled. I remember I was starting to have to go to the bathroom. In the classroom's fluorescent lights, he cast no shadow on any side. By which he said, I mean true heroism. Not heroism as you might know it from films or the tales of childhood. You are now merely at childhood's end. You are ready for the truth's weight to bear it. The truth is that the heroism of your childhood entertainments was not true valor. It was theater, the grand gesture, the moment of choice, the mortal danger, the external foe, the climactic battle whose outcome resolves all designed to appear heroic, to excite and gratify an audience. An audience. He made a gesture I can't describe. Gentlemen, welcome to the world of reality. There is no audience. No one to applaud, to admire, no one to see you. Do you understand? Here is the truth. Actual heroism receives no ovation, entertains no one. No one queues up to see it, no one is interested. He paused again and smiled in a way that was not one bit self-mocking. True heroism is you, alone in a designated workspace. True heroism is minutes, hours, weeks, year upon year of the quiet, precise, judicious exercise of probity and care, with no one there to see or cheer. This is the world, just you and the job at your desk. You and the return, you and the cash flow data, you and the inventory protocol, you and the depreciation schedules, you and the numbers. His tone was wholly matter of fact. It suddenly occurred to me that I had no idea how many words he'd spoken since that 8,206th one at the conclusion of the review. I was aware of how every detail in the classroom appeared very vivid and distinct, as though painstakingly drawn and shaded, and yet also being completely focused on the substitute Jesuit, who was saying all these very dramatic or even romantic stuff without any of the usual trappings or flourishes of drama. Standing now quite still with his hands again behind his back, I knew the hands weren't clasped. I could somehow tell that he was more like holding the right wrist with his left hand. And his face is plain, unshadowed in the white light. It felt as though he and I were at opposite ends of some kind of tube or pipe, and that he really was addressing me in particular, although obviously in reality he wouldn't have been. The literal reality was that he was addressing me least of all, since obviously I wasn't enrolled in advanced tax or getting ready to take the final and then go home and sit at my childhood desk in my old bedroom in my parents' house cramming for the dreaded CPA exam, the way it sounded as if many of these others in the room were. Nevertheless, as I wished I'd been able to understand earlier, since it would have saved me a lot of time and cynical drifting, a feeling is a feeling, nor can you argue with the results. Anyhow, meanwhile, in what essentially seemed to be a recapitulation of his main point so far, the substitute said, "True heroism is a priori incompatible with audience or applause or even the bare notice of the common run of man. In fact," he said, "the less conventionally heroic or exciting or advertising or even interesting or engaging a labour appears to be, the greater its potential as an arena for actual heroism, and therefore as a denomination of joy unequalled by any you men can yet imagine." It seemed then that a sudden kind of shudder went through the room, or maybe an ecstatic spasm, communicating itself from senior accounting major or graduate business student to senior accounting major or grad business student, so rapidly that the whole collective seemed for an instant to heave. Although again, I'm not 100% sure this was real, that it took place outside of me, in the actual classroom, and the possible collective spasms moment was too brief to be more than sort of fleetingly aware of it. I also remember having a strong urge to lean over and tie my boots' laces, which never translated itself into real action. At the same time, it might be fair to say that I remembered the substitute Jesuit as using pauses and bits of silence, rather the way more conventional, inspirational speakers use physical gestures and expressions. He said, "To retain care and scrupulosity about each detail from within the teeming wormhole of data and rule and exception and contingency which constitutes real-world accounting, this is heroism. To attend fully to the interests of the client and to balance those interests against the high ethical standards of AFASB and extant law, yea, to serve those who care not for service but only for results, this is heroism. This may be the first time you've heard the truth put plainly, starkly. Effacement, sacrifice, service. To give oneself to the care of others' money, this is effacement. Perjurance, sacrifice, honour, doubtiness, valour. Hear this or not, as you will. Learn it now or later. The world has time. Routine, repetition, tedium, monotony, ephemerisy, inconsequence, abstraction, disorder, boredom, angst, ennui. These are the true hero's enemies. And make no mistake, they are fearsome indeed, for they are real."